GOP rigs elections. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is hiring a full-time news fellow. Submit your application by February 5th. Find out more at democracynow.org. And you can sign up for our daily digest and news headlines by texting the word Democracy Now!, one word, to 66866. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkner, Nate Feltz, Dina Gesder, Nermin Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gadisdiner, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Massoud, Tarina Nadura. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Miguel Nogueira, Mike DeFilippo. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor U.S.-Saudi Coalition Bring Peace or War on Saturday, February 3rd from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Lincoln Performance Hall in Portland. This event will focus on Saudi wars, aggressions, and its relations with the West. Speakers include Aisha Juman, Mohammed Al-Namir, Catherine Shakhtam, and more. Again, that's U.S.-Saudi Coalition, Bringing Peace or War, on Saturday, February 3rd, from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Lincoln Performance Hall, 1620 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 28th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from February 2nd through March 3rd. The Cascade Festival of African Films shows us Africa through the eyes of Africans, rather than a vision of Africa packaged for Western viewers. The films represent different countries and cultures and a range of lifestyles from pre-colonial to modern times, including both rural and urban settings. Films include 76 and the Footprints of Pan-Africanism and more at the Hollywood Theater, and The African Who Wanted to Fly, Foreign Bodies, Wulu, and many more at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, Room 104 at the PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 28th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from February 2nd through March 3rd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Portland.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO, your community radio station, 90.7 here in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, Albany, and via the World Wide Web, it's kboo.fm. This is More Talk Radio, and I am your host, Cecil Prescott. Today is January 29th. 2018, and we welcome you on this Monday morning, the last Monday of the first month in the year 2018. We hope that this month went okay, that you avoided all the flu bugs and all of that, and all other types of bugs that you might encounter on the way. We have a great program this morning, and I hope that you stay tuned, and you will have the opportunity to join in conversation this morning. This morning, we will be talking with Justice Raji, who is offering a course this month, in February, so 2-3 days away from is February, with the Portland Underground Graduate School here in Portland, PUGS PDX. And the course is entitled, I hope I have this correctly, Portland African American Boys, How to Be an Ally. All right. And Justice is here to talk about the course and Hopefully it's something about himself and why he is passionate about this. And thank you this morning for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And I just want to also acknowledge that, you know, if you really are engaged by what Justice has to say, that Justice has a podcast, right?
Yes, sir.
And it's called, again?
The Ask Your Old Head Podcast.
Ask Your Old Head
Podcast. Yes, sir.
Okay. How long have you been doing that?
I guess officially I've been working on it for about 3 years, up and down. I'm a one-man show, so sometimes it doesn't get done, sometimes it does. However, right now, going strong, getting a couple interviews every month.
Oh, great. That's fantastic. And so you are and I heard on one of your podcasts that you also like to ride your bike, or you're trying to get more into riding your bike.
Yes. I ride my bike mostly for exercise, and I'm trying to get back to riding into town and commuting at least a couple days a week when I can via bike. And I'm definitely an advocate of or one that would encourage you to get out, get out of your car, use transit, walk, ride bikes. I've actually felt a lot healthier when I'm able to use that and not just have to drive all the time.
It's a way in which to get everything going and started and being aware of the world around you.
Yes, sir. Your body, physical awareness, using your body to get things done and not sort of shunning, physical activity is, I think, really important for people. I think it's a challenging thing that we wrestle with. You study our history, we usually walked and we were on our legs and you're moving around. You did your intellectual activities as well, but you still actually had some physical movement. And so any way you can get it going, I support that.
Excellent. So you're not only, I imagine, not only an advocate for good, healthy living,
yes,
but also in helping to build stronger communities as well.
Yes, sir. In many ways, since I've been here in Portland, which is about 13 years, I've tried to find ways to engage and share whatever skills I have to make space and make a community. Community to me is about people first,
yes,
and coming together and making that commitment to be present for each other. But it requires an intentionality, and amongst the many challenges in the way our society functions, you can be pulled away from community and connection, in the service of trying to get your basic needs met, unfortunately, either through work or whatever you have to do, to earn and keep a roof over your head. And so I feel like you got to put time and focus energy on it, or else you could get caught and get lost in the sauce, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't just happen. It's something intentional in terms of building, constructing a community.
Yes, sir.
The type of community you want to,
mm-hmm,
to live in. Tell us a little bit, and I imagine part of that building community and an extension of this is this course that you will be offering. But I imagine it's an extension of who you are and what you do in your daily lives.
Yes, sir.
A
lot of the motivation for the course, starts with, as I like to say, the work that I have had to do to keep myself upright and healthy, the way I've had to respond to either the way I've, things I've experienced in the various institutions that we all move through as we grow up in age. So from schools to, religious, spiritual spaces to the family spaces, the general reality of being Black in America, and having to figure out how to deal with pieces of information or facts and an experience in a way that you treat it and figure out, is it me? Is it what's around me? Did this person intend to treat me that way? Why did my teacher bring this up? When you find out a new piece of information about, the actual history and things of that nature. I guess at an even more basic level, I'm a father of two, a sibling to two others. I have grandparents. I have all the requisite, human relationships, and those people, cared and loved, loved me.
Right.
And understanding how we're treated and experiences that we have, and the people who in other spaces, you know, have violated different parts of my own humanity and dignity. I understand that everyone doesn't get through to a healthy place, and that there requires some, you know, the dedicated space to talk about, well, you know, what are the stories that come out of growing up in this society? And not just the doom and gloom but the stories. You know, when you tell a story about yourself, you tell a whole piece. You don't just, you know, maybe some people do. I don't just focus on all of the pain. It's also like, you know, a kid that called me, you know, the N-word, you know, the first time in 1984 that I remember, at least.
Yeah.
That experience was not just that kid calling me out of my name. There was other things going on that day that were more or less cool, right?
Yes.
But I remember that, and I also remember the way I responded, and then I also remember the other things that came up for me that my mother had taught me, that my mom and father had taught me, the considerations that I, you know, it was much more complex than just a, this person hates me, so they called me out of my name, and now it's over or it's done. It's like, it's a, you know, we have complex lives and complex experiences, and if they're not, our efforts sometimes to oversimplify the world ends up with folks having the space to sort of wiggle out of responsibility to do better, as I see it.
Yes. So I think, you know, one of the things, it makes it so simple to try to come up with simple explanations.
Yeah.
It's easy to either categorize people or communities or try to find simple explanation.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things, one of the phrases, you know, heard over and over again, and I despise, although I probably imagine the origins and the sentiments of it, is a phrase something like African American boys are the most endangered species in society, and that, for me at least, it's an easy way out without understanding young boys and young men.
Yeah, I think it's a, and I hope this lands the right way. It's this concept of almost like, the poor crippled children.
Yes.
Oh, it's so sad. Yeah. It's like, I appreciate you. I would like your empathy. I don't need sympathy. I need you to care about my experience and want to, like, actually assist me and connect with me as a human, and then the requisite systems and things that go along with that. I don't need you just to feel bad about whatever you may think or perceive is happening to me. You know, and I would say, especially at different times in life, you find yourself in, like, the, oh man, these kids are going to be the craziest kids ever conversation.
Right.
And then I, you know, with some introspection and some honesty about myself, you go, wait a minute, I've seen some interesting stuff too. Like, and then you study our history and other society, you're kind of like, you know, our ability to be captured by the moment and then resign a situation to, you know, a characterization that doesn't actually give any opportunity to make change or to give the people who you're speaking about a voice in their own experience. Right, so it's easy to go, oh, well, you know, all the black kids, they're in danger. Yeah. It's not going to work out for them. And, it, you know, which then when they don't show up in your workplace and they don't show up in your places of healing or in your various systems and services, you go, of course not. They were in danger. They shouldn't be here.
Right.
It's like, whoa. No, they should all be there. There's lots of folks, you know, who may have hardship and experience rough experiences, but a lot of people make it into adulthood or whatever have you and grow older, and this, you know, kind of modeling, you know, as I like to say, and thinking about the world that then makes it convenient to not miss the adults, you know, who come from those children, right?
Yes.
So you're just kind of setting up a future where you don't have to be, I don't have to look for you because I've already accepted the idea that you were, you know, heading towards extinction, which is ridiculous.
Yes, it is. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO. I'm Cecil Prescott. I'm speaking with Justice Roji, who is offering a course with PUGS PDX this February on African American on boys, Portland African American boys, how to be an ally. Tell us a little bit about the origin of this course and yes, the origins, why you're offering, and who might be interested.
Well, I think to give context towards the origin, my day work, I work for POYC and I run a program called Chi Elevate. I work with young men 17 to 25 that are on adult probation. Prior to that, I worked in a program that worked with juvenile offenders in the same space, juvenile and their families. And prior to that, in my life outside of doing customer service, I've always sort of worked either in education or educational spaces with, when I could, folks in my own community, you know, mm-hmm. with young black children in general or young people. You know, part of the origin of the course is my experience has taught me that often some of the folks, especially that are supposed to be service providers or other institutional representatives, so that being police, parole and probation, teachers, the desk clerk at the human services office, Social Security, I mean, just anywhere where people have a human interface, you know, when you go to the hospital and you need to see your doctor and the receptionist is rude to you, all these different spaces where I've seen that people's interface with the macro society and the person who's sitting there, who's a gatekeeper in a sense, doesn't really know anything about me. Doesn't really, they have these ideas, oh, endangered species, or they're operating off the oldest tape in our society, which is threat. Yes. As soon as you walk in, threat. Why is he here? It's a hospital. I'm here to get medical assistance. What do you think I'm here for? You sure you're not here to look for drugs? Or you know, right. Those type of experiences has led me to an understanding that sometimes I don't think folks have a good understanding of the experiences that young black boys especially have in light of also our recent experience with the police violence and the Trayvon Martin, sorry, I'm getting broke up, Khalif Browder, you name it, and the black, you know, and these things energize sort of the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, and but the stories of, or an understanding of who, what young men sometimes experience, what kids experience, and I try not to separate, you know, men from boys, because you know, the boy is feared because of the man he'll be. The man then sometimes has to deal with the ramifications of the trauma he experienced as a boy, right? And my hope to start to create a space to learn about how those, especially who do service, can operate differently with the young either boys that they engage, or the young men that they may engage, or the full grown adult men they may engage. And have hopefully not be perpetuating sort of our racist norms in a space, especially when they're supposed to be delivering help or service to someone who's coming for aid or to follow through on a task or trying to improve their education or trying to move their career forward. All of these things to me are interconnected. And so that was my hope and inception with the classes. Let's create an intentional space, and I'm willing to make my time available to try to give some understanding and some deeper learning.
That's great. So it's people who might be interested, or people who might be like service providers, agency, people working in agencies. It's a 4-week course, is that correct?
Yeah, it's 4 weeks.
Tell us something about what will happen during each week.
We're going to start off with setting the context, which is part setting the stage in terms of where we're at. So it'll be a little bit of data for the data folks. Some people love numbers, you know.
Exactly.
There will definitely be some, for on my part at least, some storytelling to give you context, because I, you know, my philosophy in terms of teaching is you need to know who you're learning from, which is also for me modeling what's important to those who engage with young black men in an educational space. They need to know who you are and have a relationship with you before they're going to decide it's okay to learn from you,
right?
And then also, I also believe in the consent of those learning, that we're in community. So I need to know who's in the room, what are your interests, what are you hoping to get out of this experience? So then we can, shape, what we move forward with to get the best experience for everybody present. So the beginning part, and also some just, you know, some U.S. history, and also some pointing to things that if you don't know about them, you know, in the space and time of the class, we won't have time, an hour and a half each class, to read all of this. But to say, here's some resources. If you've never seen these, you need to learn about them. You need to know about Vanport. You know, if you're here in Portland, you need to know about the exclusionary laws of Oregon. If you don't know detail, you need to learn about it right now. Right? You need to understand the experience that shaped the present world that we have. From there, we're gonna move in to in the second week. You know, value and vision, and for me, that's about perception. What are some of the narratives that have been perpetuated about Black men specifically? What are some of the images that have been, you know, reintroduced over and over again? What are some of the ideas that, no matter how many different ways, it's sort of like a vampire, that you take them out, they keep coming back. They come back in some other form, some other fashion. And, you know, throughout the process, and in this one too, I'm going to encourage participants to you know, do some writing and some cognitive stuff for themselves of, what are you thinking? What are some of the stuff that's come up for you? Because I want folks to get some awareness of where they may, you know, in most of my experience, folks are not always outwardly just domineering or negative, but they may have something that persists, you know, and when safety gets raised, they may be triggered, or, you know, if they feel uncomfortable, then, you know, that default pops back up, that narrative, oh, I didn't think I thought that way. And it's like, well, it was latent. Yeah. It was there, you know. Third week, we're going to go more into things that I've been tracking, that folks in community that I've seen a lot of Black men specifically doing to try to impact their own experience and tell their own stories in different ways. So some in the direct service lane of things, some in the imaging and sort of the, you know, what they're making available for people to hear about their own stories. You know, we'll definitely in there talk a little art, little music, and some other things, because I think you can't talk about our experience without tapping into some of those worlds, and especially the worlds where, you know, as I like to say, if you give people access, they tend to take advantage of it and make something great.
Yeah.
And entertainment, music, sports is an arena where, you know, culture where we, you know, have not experienced as much resistance as other areas in American life. And the closing week will be trying to bring all that together into some, just how can we connect? What are opportunities and appropriate spaces for folks to maybe do more, or to continue to study, to build, you know, some meaningful relationships that will hopefully be beneficial to everybody involved. And also just review anything in me as a educator. I always like to get some feedback in some real time, like what landed, what didn't, you know, how are we feeling, and accepting the idea that, you know, learning is a long arc activity, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, what we do in this first 4 weeks is not the end. It's just it's opening a doorway, and that you have to keep, you know, kind of feeding if you want to, you know, move your understanding to a new place.
Excellent. We're speaking this morning with Justice Raji, who is a works with Portland Organizing Opportunities Industrialization Center.
Yes, sir.
You know, I never knew that whole. I just knew it's, POIC.
It's a long. It's a lot of letters in there.
Working with young Black men on probation, he is as offering a opportunity for people to learn and be participants, active participants as allies for Black boys, with a course that's offered, just occurred to me, appropriately in February, you know, Black History Month, with Pugs PDX, and you can go to Pugs PDX to find more information about it and about enrollment. And what do you say to people who say, well, I really don't know anything. I mean, I don't have any experience with, you know, Black boys, and I don't know whether this is, is this for me or not, or what?
Well, I would say, first of all, you know, if you don't know anything, that means maybe it's a good time to learn something.
Learn something.
Right?
All right.
Get your roots. Get some roots started. But I would say from the, you know, maybe if more of the apprehension there would be concern of like context or like meaning or value. The only way to me and the way that folks typically really learn is by hearing stories, you know, hearing the connections and making a meaningful connection with somebody that's sharing some information, right? And sharing an opportunity to learn. And often the either the utility or where that's valuable shows up later, right? But if you are interested or you're, you know, in a space where you feel like, well, I hear about these things and I don't really know what to do and I'm having this anxiety and I feel like I should do something, right? Sometimes starting to engage in a space to learn will start to move you towards a direction where you can have a understanding of how you can act. Right? You know, for me, knowledge always precedes activity. Right? You learn a little bit and then you start doing. You know, not totally, you don't want to learn too long because then you can have inaction where you're just sitting around like, I'm just thinking really hard. And like, thinking's cool. But then you between the learning and the acting, you get a deeper understanding and you'll start to move forward. So I would say, and the thing I like about pugs is, you know, one of the cool things about pugs is, you know, to teach, you also have had to take courses before, and I've taken a few courses. It's really nice to just be in a learning environment with other, you know, mostly adults who are wanting to continue their learning about the world, you know, for the benefit of their own, you know, sense of humanity. I don't think that there's ever a time when connecting and getting a deeper understanding of people, you know, doesn't return some value. So that would be my call.
Oh, that's excellent. Excellent. And if you'd like to ask Justice some questions or want to make some interesting, valid points, we invite you to join the conversations. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And hear more about on the course about Portland African American Boys, subtitle, How to Be an Ally. I think that's important, especially in these times as you suggested that people are concerned about our society, are concerns about the fragmentization that takes place and the need to find places where you can have these valuable learning opportunities and meaningful conversation, and PUGs offer such an opportunity, and you're offering a space and time for people to do that. Again, what day
It will be on Tuesdays from, I want to say, 7 to 8:30 at the Tabor Space. But once you register on the site, it'll give you all of the information the class.
The Tuesdays in February.
In February, pardon me.
Four weeks.
4 weeks.
Excellent. And our numbers again are 503-231-8187. Earlier, before we went on the air, we had a time to get to know one another, and you mentioned and shared that, like many people here, that you are not a native to the Northwest, and you, at some time, you and your partner found your way to
Portland.
To Portland, and
yeah,
how did that happen?
Well. So my wife, we were living in Pittsburgh. I went to school and to college in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, at the University of Pennsylvania. And we were looking to move. We just, you know, thought in terms of our interests and professionally and some other things that we needed to make a change. And so she grew up in between California and Arizona, and we were intending to move to the Bay Area. Maybe I get the dates wrong, I suppose, but this is my story. From my account, about a year or so before we moved here, her folks moved out here to Hillsboro. And we were, you know, I had a 2-year-old son at the time, and we were like, well, that's, you know, California's expensive. more, not that the West Coast in general is more, is kind of expensive, but that's another story. In general, you know, specifically, we came out to visit. You know, I did a little study on the city, and I, you know, went around, saw the sites, and you know, her interests in sustainability and things of that nature kind of, you know, drew her to the city. And we said, well, we'll give it a try on family. The one thing I will say that I think is a salient thing, Oregon did do the, we went to the coast the week I came to visit. We went to the coast in March.
Yes.
And it was like 65 degrees and sunny for like 3 days in a row. And I was like, man, if this is what Oregon winter in March is like, I'm sold. You know, it's freezing in New Jersey. They got me. You know, Oregon got me. You know, you never know what the coast. But, you know, as I tell people, the coast is beautiful. Just don't get in the water if you don't want to be cold.
That's right.
Just, it's been pretty, though. It's very beautiful. And, you know, but I would say I was, I felt good about, you know, the energy when I came out here to visit, and I said, well, let's give it a try. And you know, as we started to set roots here and get to know people and connect and do things, we said, well, this is home. So that's how it happened.
So excellent. So you came out here, and like so many people, you found yourself, this is the place where you wanted to stay and build your family, and that's excellent.
Yes, sir.
That's excellent. I do know that it's different in terms of culture, in terms of attitude here on the left coast than it is on the east coast.
Mm-hmm.
Were there one? I certainly know there were certain challenges everyone facing when they move into a new environment, but in terms of working with African-American boys, are there unique factors that are here in Oregon that may be different than in Southeast or the East Coast? Or
yeah, I believe, I think in general, and this is actually a part of my thinking with the course, is there are, although some of the commonalities in the nature of being black in America move around, there are always, you know, specific nuances to a city and a region's history and how it came together, and what things are important in that area, what things are not as important, what ideas spread there, what ideas did not spread in that area. I would say, you know, Portland, the Northwest has a different style, definitely, than, you know, New Jersey, where I'm from, in terms of, you know, and I'm sure it's a well-worn story of the passive-aggressive thing and the like, you know, being nice even when you're not really being nice kind of stuff. You know, we don't need to go down that road.
Yeah.
But the style of the people, where are the communities that, especially when you're talking about black boys here, you have some folks, since I've been here, who, you know, are part of that move that came out in the World War II and the shipping and all that. Then you have some other threads, people who been here a little longer,
right?
They, you know, in whatever numbers, what were the tactics that the community employed to try to protect itself and to grow? Because just like anywhere else in America, African American and people and black people, you know, trying to find a space where they could, you know, live a life, you know, have families, have community. And in Oregon, even with its exclusionary laws and everything else, we still have people saying, well, you know, maybe we can make a go of it, right? So knowing that history and how that connects to what the young people have, you know, fast forwarding, you know, to this time, you know, what was going on here in the 80s, you know, as I reference it, the crack age affected different parts of the country and black communities differently.
Right.
In a city here where you have, in my vision, a much a smaller, tighter community. A lot more people are connected, you know, relationship wise, you know, cousins, aunts, uncles, or marriage. Like, there's a lot closer ties, just due to the population numbers. I believe that's my estimation. So the effect that age had here is not necessarily the same as it had where I grew up in Trenton and in Willowboro, New Jersey.
Right.
Right. understanding those nuances, not trying to use them, like I said, in excess, but of an understanding of loyalties, areas of friction, people who don't get along with each other, or when you meet, you know, people. When I first come here, I would just come to community things and try to get to know people, and I would like hear names, and I'd be like, I've never met that person. People always talk about him, but he's never here. And then, you know, then I would meet the other person one day, and you know, and there was just history and challenge,
right?
That is not necessarily for me to repair or to solve, but to understand why is it tight. You know, being mindful of who you talk about, because I've also had the experience being here where you start talking about somebody and you find out this person is their cousin or this is their friend. And I mean, in general, you don't want to badmouth people, but just the thing of you might be trying to get catharsis, trying to get understanding, and then you step on someone's toes inadvertently, right? Because you don't know. The assumptions that are made about the experience of black boys here, either, you know, especially in a very liberal city, the assumption that the experience is fair.
Oh.
Right. Even without any evidence.
What do you mean by that?
Like just that, let me drill down that because we are a very, you know, liberal left wing city, that our practice necessarily reflects sort of the higher ideals that may be encapsulated there, where the actual practice may be just as negative as other spaces, you know, maybe just in a different form, either the diminishing expectations, the assumption of ill intent, you know, when a kid either is acting out or is upset, the assumptions made about the parents, these things, you know, just because your politics are one way is no guarantee that you actually are practicing a deeper, you know, understanding of the people that you serve. And that sometimes it's been my experience is people assuming that, you know, that shouldn't happen in a city like this. It's like, well, it could. You know, these two things are not necessarily mutually exclusive.
I think that's a very important point because I think many of us know that in terms of the sense that the image of liberal left progressive folks, which immune us from, we're not, you know, rabid anti-poor black folks or racist or not deliberately so. And I think that makes it much, we have to unearth, I think, the power of say, racism in all communities and how it acts on and through us, but also recognize to get beyond that denial that is, I find that's very strong. Well, we're not like those folks. So, no, it just makes it, for me, I think, much more difficult in conversations for people to acknowledge that, you know, way to go.
I would say, just to add on to that, the experience of, you know, typically when folks are confronted in a way where they don't understand what they said, they will, you know, they'll fight you about it. And so you got to kind of find a way to ease, to move around them so they can get to the understanding, you know, through their own means.
Means. We're speaking this morning with Justice Rajee of POIC, who's offering a course on Portland African American Boys, How to Be an Ally with PUGS PDX in February. Our numbers here to speak with Justice is 503-231-8187. And we'll go to Jackson. Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I was listening to your guest, and he was talking about how he came from the East Coast. I came up here around maybe 98, 99 from Virginia.
Yes.
And I just wanted to get his take on how the East Coast and its more conservative attitude might be a little different than like the Pacific Northwest and its more liberal attitude, And coming from Virginia, like, when I first saw a lot of the older black neighborhoods being gentrified, I thought it was just like something that's specific to the East Coast. But then I was kind of surprised with the left-leaning city with its gentrification and all of the economic issues, you know, with our little black boys specifically, you know, at economic level. Well, what's his take on that?
Okay, same line, Jackson.
Please. Well, I would say, I mean, the one thing growing up where I did, contrary kind of to the common narrative, is we always knew where the lines were. Because oftentimes, especially Northeast cities, are sort of characterized as if people don't know where the racial dynamics are.
Yeah.
And there was lines. There's like, don't cross that street. Don't go to that. You know, Medford's not for you.
Right.
Cherry Hill's not for you necessarily, depending on how you carry yourself. I would say the nuance I found here, especially when I first came, was the assumption that the outcomes, especially as when I first got here, like I said, in 2004, I know some of the gentrification of the Northeast was in what I would call the, like, things have already started changing, things are moving already. Some of the obvious signs that I would normally pick up and go, okay, now I know where I'm at. To know I'm in an area that maybe is not treated with much respect in terms of the operational apparatus of our society. We're already starting to leave, but the super hyper, you know, spaceship has landed sort of thing that's going on now hadn't kicked in. But the assumption, I think, and this is where I would say, getting to your question, the factors that make that happen, I would say sometimes in a liberal, more liberal space like here, the assumption is that that is the result of a benign sort of economic movement that is not rooted in any past history or anything. It just happened. You know, oh, well, there was nice houses and people wanted to move in them, so things changed, as opposed to making sure that there's still that characterization of tying in that, like, yeah, that area, you know, was whatever the status of it was, is because the people who were there were inhibited intentionally from being able to build on their own homes and their own spaces. They were not afforded access to the tools to do what they wanted to do with their own space and were willfully meddled with.
What people you're talking to in specifically?
I would say the, you know, in terms of talking about the black community, that typically if you owned your home in a red line neighborhood, you know, you couldn't get, if you wanted to take a loan to fix something or to improve your own property or to change it in a way that would be more beneficial to you in the neighborhood, if you didn't have just the personal capital from, you know, either something that you, your work or some other means, you would not be able to access some of the same tools that the people who come in and gentrify the neighborhood are able to access. You know, they're not coming in empty-handed. They're coming in with means and money to pay.
Right. Economics. Right. Okay. All right. Because I was kind of surprised, being in a left-leaning city, that, you know, there appeared to be some level of redlining with Northeast Portland. You know, so it was like, you know, I was trying to get my bearings on, at an economic level, you know, how does that work? Because, I mean, East Coast is the East Coast. There's a high concentration of African Americans on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And I understand the politics behind why the East Coast did it for political and economic means. But out here, you know, it's a different world. So, you know, I just want to get your take out on that, you know, because it's like, you know, like, it's a little disheartening, you know.
You
go down to, like, Oakland and see what's going on down there, and how close it is to San Francisco, and how there's a lot of left-leaning politics down there, and how the left-leaning politics is directly associated with access to economic wealth.
Yes.
And I'll let you take the floor from there, and I'll listen to you on the radio. Thank you very much for your time. And I'd like to get more information on plugs, please.
Will do. You can actually just go to www.pugspdx.com. And it, you know, take you right to the courses right there on the front page. And I believe you can also look them up on Facebook. We have a Facebook group, and on the Instagram, to get just more information or images and plug into some of the community. And there also is a happy hour tomorrow night, 6 p.m. at the Red Cardinal. I hope I got that right.
Okay.
I didn't look at my note just now.
Yeah, make sure to repeat that before the end of the show.
Okay, yeah, we'll do. That. I'll see if I can pull it up and make sure I got it. But it'll be a good time to get some information. And I would say, just on the that last point you brought up, you know, the my first experience with, and one of my earliest political thoughts, I would say, as a kid, was realize, like, you know, this was my mother. I think I unnerved her a little bit, because I was sort of questioning something that I, you know, things I was seeing on TV, and it didn't appear to me that there was like, the Republicans and Democrats and liberals and the conservatives. To me, it was like white people,
right,
and us. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And then I'm like, oh, there's like two different teams over there. You know what I mean? And but the tone and the idea that, like, the, you know, the more liberal side would just really be more supportive, was not was something I wrestled with, you know, because my initial read as a child, just looking at the information and going, this seems strange, was like, yeah, I don't really know if y'all are separate teams or not. Not necessarily.
I'm not crazy. All right. Okay, because I kind of saw the same thing. And, you know, I have a lot of liberal-leaning friends, and they, and I noticed that they're ready to be there at the problem when it's out of control, but they're really quiet at the source, which is maybe using their privilege to help create businesses and all that to where we don't have these problems in the first place. But I noticed, you know, when it comes up to money and economics, the liberals, it's just, I'm like you. I had to really re-question a lot of things being up in the Pacific Northwest. And I'll let you have the floor and listen to you guys on the radio. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you so much, Jackson. You're listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott. And we are speaking with Justice Rajee, who is offering a course at PugsPDX.com on Portland African American Boys, How to Be an Ally, this February. Generous pricing policy and scholarships are available. And we, if you're interested in the course, go to PugsPDX.com and more information. We'll have some more information shortly on the happy hour. Let's go to our next caller, Dale.
Yes.
Good
Hello,
morning.
Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Good morning. Hi. Okay, Justin, I happen to have the day off from work. I heard you on KBOO. I'm an African-American woman who grew up in South Jersey in Berlin.
All right. I'm familiar.
Yeah, definitely. And so I was, and my background is land use planning and environmental planning, and I was just really keying in on some of the points you're making, and I commend you for doing this class. And, you know, that experience you talked about in the East Coast where you had neighborhoods, whether it was urban or rural, or suburban, you just knew where black people could go, where you could go, but you'd feel uncomfortable. You know, and then where you could go and be okay. And I know when I first moved out here in the Northwest, I've been out here for about 25 years, and the first 20 were in the Seattle area, and they're so diverse there. And I remember when I would take trips to Portland, which I live in Oregon now, but when I would take trips to Portland, I always felt more visible in Portland. I kind of felt like people were kind of staring at me and then like looking away real quick if I kind of, you know, look over or something like that. And Portland kind of remains a little bit of a mystery to me. I still, you know, don't quite, it's just, I still feel like I'm on display somehow in Portland. Mm-hmm. Doesn't stop me from going there, but it's just something about that city. And, you know, it's I don't know, I guess I'll just put that out there. But mainly I wanted to call and say I hear what you're saying and I commend you for doing the class.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And our numbers again are 503-231-8187. And we'll go to LJ. Good morning, sir.
Hey, Cecil, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good, happy new year.
Same to you.
All right, so what we really have to do is kind of take a look back at our history. I truly believe that there was a concerted effort to destroy Afro-American black neighborhoods. North Albina, which was a flourishing neighborhood, was totally destroyed for the Coliseum. All right, to put up that silly Coliseum. Then we had a history of redlining. Right, redlining means that in black neighborhoods, there's no money available from banks for investment. And so I do believe that it's a concerted effort on the part of the dominant culture who run the show in this town, is to destroy any kind of successful black neighborhoods. And I will take my responses off the air.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Well, what I would say is, you're right in terms of the concept of redlining and what I mentioned earlier is, and it's a national phenomenon,
yes.
Right? Is the thing that folks need to understand. The local reality of it is Northeast, so North Albina, but also if you study the serial displacement of black people here, from starting across the water in the Pearl, which used to be. You know,
yes.
The black neighborhood to coming across to where the Coliseum now stands, to going up the road, you know, into where Northeast to Legacy Hospital, to, you know, all these different pushing and moving of people. You know, it reflects a dynamic, and as I like, you know, I've seen it in other cities, it's just the idea that there are some folks that it is an acceptable collateral damage for them to be displaced, and other people, you know, not so much. And, you know, so not just here locally, but nationally in other cities, but that is but if you live here in Portland, you should know what's happened and what's going on and what's currently happening right now. The one thing I will say, and I can't ever be in a space like this and let it be, you know, despite the challenges, people persist, people build families, people make a way, and it's not all, like, everyone, I have a friend who, I'm not going to say her name, but I know she would be upset if I did not say, there's lots of folks that still own their homes, still own their property, and are fighting to keep building the community the same way, you know, their grandparents and great-grandparents did when they got here. So, you know.
Thank you, LJ. And, We're speaking with Justice Rogier POIC, who's offering a course on African American boards, how to be an ally. Worked with the with boys and young men who are on probation, and we haven't really talked about the system and how it impacts that. I suspect Francis, who's next, might want to participate in that part of the conversation. Good morning, Francis.
Hi. I'm not quite sure what you're referring to as far as the system. Are you talking about the school system? Or
I'm talking about the law everything. Enforcement and justice system.
Oh, law enforcement. Oh, my gosh. That's what I was... You know, I agree with your caller before the last one as far as Portland being, I call it schizophrenic, because it's been really frustrating for me to being a white woman married to a black man who was sent to prison when he was very young, when we were just married, and then our children having to deal with the negative expectations constantly. Daily negative expectations, and to watch young people have to somehow make that okay so they continue being positive in their lives. And I really appreciate the fact that you are doing this. One thing in our community that I noticed when I moved to Northeast Portland, I moved there so that my children would feel comfortable living somewhere without always being stared at.
Yes.
And I watched that our community just be gentrified. And before the economic, I mean, I know, understand there was redlining and everything so that people could not make the improvements to their businesses or whatever that other people who came after had access to. But the, one of the most nefarious things was how the, our community was criminalized. And our children were criminalized. One of my young sons was probably racially profiled at least 15 times, and after he turned 12 years old and started looking like a young man, within a three-year period, he was profiled in his own neighborhood within a five-block radius of his home, the only place he ever lived his whole life, by police officers, and one time at gunpoint. That, to me, is a faulty, nefarious, cruel, ugly thing to have happened in our community, and no one in the city hall or all of these liberal echelons will really truly come be honest about that and acknowledge it. And you know, grandma's house is labeled a gang house because a lot of kids hang out there. All of that stuff is probably something that really, you know, we talk about truth and reconciliation, that really needs to be discussed thoroughly, and a lot of nefarious activities need to be acknowledged.
Yes.
And I appreciate what you're doing with this program, because I ended up homeschooling my kids after they got out of, as soon as they got into the middle school experience. They were tired, I was tired of them always having to deal with somebody thinking they're up to something or that they can't do what they think. They're smart, brilliant, brilliant, beautiful children. And why would they have to daily go into an institution that was constantly expecting them to do something wrong or wasn't expecting them to succeed? It became ridiculous.
Thank you. Thank you, Francis, for speaking. I want Justice to reply and yeah. respond.
All right. Does that give you a little bit of what I'm thinking here.
Yes,
I can go on and on. But I do appreciate that you are addressing it. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And you said it, you know, much better than I could. You know, I mean, in terms of the experience as a parent, you know, seeing your baby and your child that you love and you know and you nurture be treated in a way that disparages and diminishes their own sense of self. It's very painful, and anything that you can do to prevent that harm. And my vision and motivation, primary motivation for wanting to teach this course, is to hopefully reduce the harm that is passed on to other young people, and also harm that is brought back to grown folks who are just trying to live their lives and do what they need to do. So thank you, Francis.
Thank you so much, Francis. And so in the last minute and a half, let's wrap up and the course and anything we need to know.
All right. So the course is Portland's African American Boys Being Ally, and that's at Pugs PDX, so www.pugspdx.com. Starts next week. Also, there's the Pugs Happy Hour tomorrow at the Cardinal Club is the name. Oh. The Cardinal Club is from 6 to 8 p.m., and it's a good opportunity to get to meet the teachers for all of the February courses, so not just mine, but there's, I think, about six other courses. Yes. So if you want to get more information in person and meet some of the folks that will be teaching next month, you can come out from 6 to 8 at the Cardinal Club, which if you Google that or use one of those tools, you'll find it. Hopefully, you know, this has been meaningful to you, and I'd love to see you in class.
Hey, thank you so much, Justice. Thank you for your work, and thank you for being a part of our community. I appreciate you taking the time to this morning and sharing.
All right. Thank you for having me, Cecil. I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to More Talk Radio. I am Cecil Prescott. Stay tuned to the Old Moe Variety Hour, followed by Locus Focus on the Ground Radio. KBOO keeps you informed, and you can get involved. So go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member. Have a good day.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Spontaneous Combustion New Music Festival, happening January 19th through February 10th at the Old Church in Portland. The Spontaneous Combustion New Music Festival features 7 new music performers, performing works by living composers, both well-known and lesser-known, as well as some works by recently deceased 20th century composers. Music by Lou Harrison, Jacob Druckmann, Julia Wolf, David Lang, and many, many more. Again, that's the Spontaneous Combustion New Music Festival, happening January 19th through February 10th at the Old Church, 1422 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 35th Annual Real Music Film Festival, taking place January 12th through January 30th at the Northwest Film Center. New works and classics are featured this year, including Charles Mingus, Triumph of the Underdog, Chavela, Long Strange Trip, The Untold Story of the Grateful Dead, The Big Beat, Fats Domino and the Birth of Rock and Roll, and many, many more. Again, that's the 35th Annual Real Music Film Festival, taking place January 12th through the 30th. All screenings are at the Witzel Auditorium in the Portland Art Museum, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Portland.